Okay.
So, Russell, you've been working for Blizzard, if I'm right, since 2007, starting...
2005.
Five, okay.
This June, it'll be 10 years.
Uh-huh. Well, congratulations in advance. So, your first project you were credited for being involved with was the Burning Crusade add-on for World of Warcraft, or are your memories different?
That's the first project that was a full release since I started. I believe I started in patch 1.6 or something like that. Maybe the one before Darkmoon Fair, for those who are really detail-oriented.
And did you start out as an employee, or was that freelance work?
Employee.
Okay. So, yeah, 10 years company anniversary. But what will you get? Is there a certain pencil with your name engraved on? What do you get at Blizzard?
So at Blizzard, at 2 years, you get a Stein, which is themed, designed by one or more of our artists.
And with then, World of Warcraft insignia, I guess.
Oh, it's very elaborate. And then at 5 years, you get a sword, and that goes up. You can put that on your wall with a plaque saying your name in commemoration of 5 years. At 10 years, you get a shield that goes with that sword. And a new whole mounting scheme, and that's quite
cool.
It is. It's quite elaborate. And 15 years, you get a kind of looks like a class ring. It's a big,
sigil ring.
But it's all completely personalized. That's nice. Another 5 years to go.
and at 20, you get a castle.
At 20, there's a helm of some kind of, I've only seen photos of them because they've undergone many design changes, and there's only a handful of 20-year employees.
So at 25, there will be the world conquest by Blizzard, and all the employees will be probably armed by then.
I will probably get our LARP hammers, Doom hammers, things like that, so we can go smack each other with the, not hurt each other.
And before Blizzard, you've already had some involvement in the games industry. I think most notably at Novalogic.
Correct.
With joint operations, you've been credited for the music.
Right, and before that, Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
Delta Force. Delta Force Black Hawk Down is the proper name. And that was just a little over 2 years there. I had been working on games my entire career. This year marks about 35 years in the business for me. And basically from the very beginning, I had, at least on a freelance basis, been doing like little sound effects for games or a little music for games. I worked a lot for Disney Interactive. Novalogic was one of my first clients. And over the years, as different projects wound down and the industry would change, I would find myself having to reinvent myself. And I worked in theme parks for a long time.
Oh,
I'd be like, suddenly that market wasn't so rich for me anymore. Mm-hmm, and then there was, and I worked in toys for a while and things like that. Always music and sound. But there came a point where I was at a crossroads and I needed to go do something else because a lot of things, this was around 2001 and a lot of things had changed in the world and reality television had happened and that meant the kind of TV shows that I used to work on, there weren't so many and I wasn't that interested in the reality television. And so I realized games had been good to me for, at that point, 20-something years. Why not take another look at games?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the sound in games was becoming more rich. Technology had caught up with at least quite a ways with our wishes for what we could do.
More channels, brighter scope.
More channels,
sound.
More fidelity.
Yeah.
Very immersive, and I got very excited about it. So, so with that, I re-entered the game. Well, I entered the game industry as a full timer.
When was that?
That was 2002.
And that was Novanoce?
And so I've been full-time in the games industry for that amount of time. But I think I did my first interactive... In fact, I consider any interactive project, like if it, I was working for Disney and we were doing interactive exhibits for Epcot Center. So these were kiosks or big things that you couldn't take home and play on. So it was technically a video game and technically an interactive thing, but it was a permanent installation. Now, so to in 2002 work go to work on games that you could take home and play that. Well, it was just the right time in our industry. I was very fortunate to see that Blizzard, shortly after the release of World of Warcraft, had an opening, and I jumped at it.
Were you playing the game at that time?
I had been playing Blizzard games since Diablo 1. I had not been playing World of Warcraft just due to the fact that I was so completely immersed in my career at that point. But I do remember, just as a regular gamer consumer, playing the original Diablo 1, and I was floored. I thought that was the most amazing thing I had played. I fell in love with the music. I thought, wow, this company has the kind of quality I aspire to. There's depth here. The game is easy to learn, very hard to master, very compelling. I wanted to keep playing it, and it just the learning curve was enjoyable, and the gameplay was really fun. The immersion was there. Again, if there's story, if you want the story, it's there. If you didn't want it, it didn't get in the way. And I thought, this is the kind of thing that I've always enjoyed about my favorite projects have always been this great convergence of technology and art, and that, I guess I would call it showmanship.
The first project you've been credited with, I could find at least, has a strange title, and I really like to take the opportunity to ask you what that is. It was 1983, and the title is What's Up, Hideous Sun Demon?
What's Up? Oh, they changed it. It was, I knew it as The Hideous Sun Demon, colon, The Special Edition.
Okay.
Well, long before Mystery Science Theater 3000 came along, which I enjoy, there were a couple filmmakers who decided to take a 1950s era bad sci-fi movie called The Hideous Sun Demon and replace the soundtrack completely to make it funny.
I see. So and it was the same movie, same...
Scenes? They didn't touch the picture at all. I remember Jay Leno played the main character, and he sort of, you know, did a first-person narration over a lot of it, as I recall. And it was just silly, but it actually, in some ways, sort of... was kind of a harbinger of Mystery Science Theater. I don't think there's any relationship there, but it was silly and it was funny, and I don't know if it went direct to video or not, but I think it's out there. And this guy who made the film in the 50s, he was still alive, and I remember he came to my studio and did some voiceover for a promo of some kind. And his son was and still is a voiceover actor who I had worked with many times. It was just a very interesting convergence of all everyone's careers in this silly movie.
Yeah, it's just sounds interesting. The title alone. You've won 3 Emmy Awards, including for the Batman animated series and the Back to the Future TV series.
Yes.
Is there something similar in the video game space which you would liken to an Emmy Award in the music or in the TV space?
There are several awards. So Diablo 3 was nominated for a BAFTA for Best Music, and I was thrilled to represent for our team, and I went to the awards, and we didn't win, but again, we were amongst great our colleagues, you know, in competition, and so that's a pretty high level one. The Game Audio Network Guild has an awards ceremony every year that is held at the Game Developers Conference, and for game audio professionals, that is the top of the heap. Those are our peers, and so I'm very proud that both myself and many of my team members and our department as a whole have won several awards there. And Diablo 3 again won Audio of the Year a couple of years ago.
If you compare video game music to movie music, TV series music, perhaps classical music, do you see differences in scope of the music? Does it have another function as in other spheres?
There's definitely some technical differences in how the music is prepared. How there's some different approaches in the limitations you might have in writing a music cue. But I'd like to say that one of the things that brought me back to the game industry as a full-time participant and loving it is that the playing field is now level for, don't want to make a bad pun there, but it's, you know, music that tells a story is music that tells a story. If it's, that's always what I've been drawn to, whether it was classical music that perfectly with notes, just painted an unmistakable picture in your mind, or whether it's a film score that supports a linear piece of media, or a game score, which provides that greater bit of immersion, and also helps paint that picture. That musical language, that it's been evolving for centuries, but it hasn't, it's never changed in its intent, and I love the fact that we can bring to bear the same musical approaches and challenges and a sort of aesthetic mindset to writing music. We can use the same things that the French Impressionists used to describe a scene or something like that with, you know, musically. It was so to me all that runs together, and I'm heavily influenced by favorite composers, again, any of the French classical composers, and Mahler and Mussorgsky and all these people, and then of course for in the film world, Bernard Herrmann and John Williams, and I love the film scores of Randy Newman, and everything. I think the common thread in all that music for me, and I could go on and on, but they all just instantly take you somewhere. And people asked, how does that happen? And I that's probably a real long answer. There are some things that I think are in our genes, and there are some things that are culturally just we've learned over the years.
With certain tunes? With certain...
There's associations that are made, and I mean, there's definitely, I mentioned a couple times now, the French Impressionists. There is a sound there. There is an Americana sound, you know, Copeland or... I grew up loving a piece called The Grand Canyon Suite by Ferdi Graffé, and it you hear just a few notes and you're there. You are in the Grand Canyon, and that's often the role, I think. So with the World of Warcraft music as an example, we're going to perform a piece tonight from Warlords of Draenor called Magnificent Desolation that I had the honor of writing, and I took that phrase from Magnificent Desolation from Buzz Aldrin, second person who walked on the moon, and he, when he looked at this landscape, those are the two words that came just spontaneously out of his mouth to describe what he was seeing. And so there were some areas in the game on Draenor when we go through the portal back in, you know, to this older, more in some places more verdant version of Draenor. But there are some areas that are very well desolate, but also magnificent. And that came to mind, and well, I want to do a piece of music that captures that. So those are two big long words for a title, but hopefully when you hear the music, just even in a few notes, you'll get that sense of this amazing space and just all the emotion that brings up. Like a film version, I can imagine, as an example, that I don't know if it was an influence per se, but comes to mind was Jean-Michel Jarre's, his father, Maurice Jarre's Lawrence of Arabia. It had this theme that, you know, just in a few notes, you saw that vast desert, but it wasn't like a lifeless thing. It was a powerful emotional context, and I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was great to have this opportunity in World of Warcraft to pull off something like that.
But normally, unlike this evening, you can't make people sit down and listen to games music from beginning to end. Of course, aficionados or buyers of a special edition will have the soundtrack. But normally in a game, you will have the soundscape for region A, and the guy will go to region B, or there will a combat. And the music changes dynamically. Is this influencing how you work with game music, for example, make it more redundant in some way, or how do you cope with that, having to fade out a piece A at any time you cannot possibly plan?
That is a challenge, and when I mentioned earlier there's a difference or a special thing in games where you might have prepared the music differently because of the dynamics of gameplay, that's an important consideration, as you mentioned. As it happens, one of the biggest parts of my career before Blizzard was working on several very famous theme parks all over the world. And I realized when I got into games full time that was great training, if you will, because if you imagine a big park, we've got a similar situation in World of Warcraft, where you have an audience that is almost free to go wherever it wants. The sound mix is determined by where you're standing. And so you as a composer and as a sound designer, you lose a fair amount of control. You have to resort to some a little bit of audio trickery. There's some things, yes, when you cross from one zone to another, you sort of crossing a tripwire and a new piece of music starts. But how do you keep it dynamic? How do you keep it from driving you crazy so you want to turn the sound off? And we battle with those things all the time. And one of the main secrets in World of Warcraft is very simple, that a lot of the background music, it doesn't loop, but it really doesn't necessarily have a beginning and an end. It kind of drifts in out of the ambient sounds, and it's there, and it establishes, reinforces a mood, and then it kind of recedes back into the ambience. And then there won't be any music for a certain amount of time that is, in some cases, randomized a bit. And the idea is we will make... it seemed like there's more music in the game than there is. You probably couldn't have too much music. But it, through creative use of not having music constantly, and then we also do a situation where we... For every piece of music we do, we record it a section at a time. We record the strings, and then we do the woodwinds, and then we do the brass. And by swapping different layers out, we'll have multiple versions of each piece of music. And if you go you might, the very first time you enter a major city for the first time in World of Warcraft, you'll get the big, we'll call it the hero version of the queue. And
all instruments are there.
Yeah. And then if you step out and back in again, you won't hear that.
Ah, okay.
You'll hear one of the stripped down versions that are a little bit more intimate, or at least meant to stay in the background so you can, you don't have to go, wow, I'm here again. Step out, step back in.
Yeah,
I'm
here.
No, we save that big moment. We actually have a thing that makes sure that within some, I think it's about an hour, you have to have been away from that area at least an hour before
you hear the full version again. Uh-huh.
And that's just, there are a lot of little tricks like that we've done so that you won't be spamming the player with the same repetitive thing over and over
again. Mm-hmm. You are director of audio and video at Blizzard?
Not video anymore.
Not video
that,
anymore.
It was about 2.5 year period. That what is now known as the they're the Machinima Group that makes they began their existence creating the it started out with trailers for the game, all filmed Machinima style in the game. It was also the same technique used for our South Park episode, which was really really fun. And that group of people, they reported to me for about 2.5 years, and together we built up that group, and it became a formidable bunch. Now doing full on in cinematics that appear in World of Warcraft, and so I'm really proud of them. But it got to be I was pretty much just there to be encouraging and keep the train on the tracks, and once they were off to a good start, we got permanent leadership in there, in place for them,
and let them do
so
their
I could
thing.
Focus on sound, because that's certainly where my specialty lies.
Let's talk about this evening and video games life. You will be the conductor this evening and be responsible for all the songs.
I'll be conducting the entire evening. That's fairly unusual. Normally, I just come up and do the Blizzard pieces, and we have done several projects with Video Games Live. They've played two of our BlizzCon shows, and two of our launch events, or announcement events, I should say, of new products overseas. When we announced StarCraft II, Wings of Liberty, and when we announced Diablo III. We worked with Tommy Tallarico and his crew to put together all Blizzard music shows. So I've conducted several of those all over the world. Now, we were already planning to meet up and do this. I was going to be on part of this tour that culminates in, for me anyway, in Dublin. But with everyone's schedules, it turned out that Tommy said, hey, I think that we can do these dates, but our normal conductor isn't available, and do you want to do that? And I jumped at it, because I think one of the things that's fun about Video Games Live is for 2 hours we sort of set our competition aside, the competitive thing aside, and just celebrate the music of our industry, which we are grateful to the industry and our gamers collectively for allowing us to have these amazing careers and create this music. And while we're competitors, we need each other. Competition is good, and there's some wonderful music being written and have been written for years. So some of these pieces of music go back quite a ways in time, and then all the way up to the present. So to hear them all reproduced to stand alone without the game and be captivating just in and of themselves as symphonic pieces, that just shows that this industry has some real class, has some wonderful values. We're bringing whole families to see the symphony again, and a lot of these orchestras around the planet they have literally been seeing their audiences just falling off because they play the same stuff, and the stuff is wonderful music. But if you want to capture a new audience and bridge those gaps, this has been a great answer for it. And in the post-concert meet and greet moments, and where we're sitting, and the, those people who want to hang out afterwards can meet us all, it's just, it means so much to us to see entire families coming to this together. And then constantly we hear, oh, my child here wants to learn to play the cello because it's something he wrote. Or you can also see the child is just, they're thrilled that their parent actually goes, you know, I think it's okay to let them play at least certain games. And, you know, and that realize that, you know, not all games are are going to be a bad influence or something like that. There's some art happening here, and there's some culture. It's an interactive book. It's a theme park. It's a movie, but it's engaging, and clearly this stuff isn't just thrown together. I think there's some music in all these games that are going to be real important someday when we look back, maybe decades from now, but we'll look back and just think this was a pretty cool era.
My last question, is there one particular piece, you mentioned Magnificent Desolation already, is there one other piece you are looking forward to conduct the most this evening?
I'm gonna do the Warcraft montage, which is celebrates pretty much all the original World of Warcraft music. Is there one thing in particular? I can't think of anything in particular. I just know that when I'm up there and some of these melodies are just so good, I think. What a privilege it is to be up there in front of these talented musicians. And when I hear the audience behind me, as much as I'm trying to focus, once in a while when they cheer, I just think, that's so cool. It might be just the first two notes of a piece of music and everyone goes, that's great. That's really good stuff. So, all of it.
Okay. Russell, thank you very much for taking the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And good luck for this evening.
Thank you so much.
And I'll send you a photo.
Oh, that'd be great.